We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Tuesday, September the 12th, 2023. If you're listening in another year, probably need to come back to us here. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim, from the year 2019.
We go back.
Year before COVID. Could go wrong?
Oh, year before COVID. I think we'd all like to go back to that. Fred Jackson, good morning, Fred.
Good morning. I'm still current.
You're still
current.
And Christopher Woodward. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right. Well, folks, if you want to join us on what Ed calls that there internet, just go to, we got two places. One, Facebook. Just go to Facebook Live and type in Today's Issues. We video stream there, and we also post the stories that we discuss, so you can have that information for yourself. And then we have our own video streaming service, streaming.afa.net. So take advantage of that. A lot of good stuff there. We stream most of our radio shows live. Streaming.afa.net. Not screaming now. Streaming.afa.net is the website. If you want to send us an email, as long as it's positive and encouraging, we call that a K-Love email. It needs to be comment. Your K-Love email can be sent to us at AFR at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. All right.
We do have Jenna Ellis up at 10:30. Okay. When we come back from that bottom of the hour break.
Okay.
So folks will look forward to having Jenna on today.
We make sure we have enough lawyers on.
Oh, yeah.
On this show. Huh? So
a lot of legal issues. And, you know, Tim, we do our best with our razor sharp minds, you and I, to address the legal issues.
Yes, we do.
But we do like to, show a little humility and have professionals on every once in a while.
Well, in fact, you were at one time thinking of going to law school.
Yes.
and your mom kept introducing you as my son, Ed, who's in law school. But
she actually used to introduce me. Folks, for those of you who have heard this story a number of times, I do apologize.
Right. But like we are older.
But like I tell my wife, if it was funny once, it's funny 10 times. My mom, I was planning on becoming a lawyer, but when felt called into the ministry,
right,
the pastorate, but my mom used to introduce me.
Right.
This is my son, Edward. He's in the ministry, but he gave up his law career. I would, on the spot, I would say, Mom, I was never a lawyer. And she would say, yeah, but you went to law school. I'd say, no, I did not.
Right.
I was an undergrad pre-law student, which is essentially nothing.
Right, I had three.
And she would say, well, same thing.
You gave up your law career. Like, you really sacrificed a lot of money and power.
Oh, prestige to the community.
Right, to go into the ministry.
To go into the ministry.
Yes, all right. gave up your law career.
And she would say, say, you could never, you know, all of us here, right, us men, you can't win an argument with a woman.
No.
Okay?
That's true.
And it's all started with my mom. I could never, and so I would explain how I did not. She would always say, well, it's the same thing.
Right.
And I would say, it's not the same. Yes, it is. Let's move on.
All right. In her Greek, right?
She was born in Greece.
Right.
And
right. I bet, you know, your mom, she passed.
Oh, she is since in 98.
98. But, I mean, she grew up in Greece.
Under Nazi occupation during World War II. She had some hair-raising stories to share about that time. Wow. And which
she was a child
did in
Greece, yes, when the Nazis occupied.
She was. Her family moved to the States when she was 11 or 12 years old. She knew no English. She was put at that age. She was put in the first grade.
Oh my!
Yeah, and she mocked incessantly the big kid. You know, in
Boston or where?
Well, in the Boston area, Lowell, yeah, Massachusetts, right outside a large Greek community there. And anyway, some of the stories she has was clearly God's hand in preserving her life and the lives of members of her family. Mm-hmm. I always used to, when I was pastoring, I would tell people, I would say, listen, you have no idea. And I had some idea, but I would tell people in my congregation, you have no idea how many lives in your lineage God spared so that you would be here.
Yeah.
Because it's not just my family. Lots of people in our lineage, way up our family tree, all of us, had God spared lives so that we and our kids, our grandkids, and mm-hmm. on could be here. So keep that in mind, that God has his hand on you and always has.
What age was she when they were able to escape to the U.S.?
She was, I think it was late 40s, so she was, I think, 11 or 12, so she was born in 36, so that was probably in 48 or so, 1948, when they made it over here.
Did they come on a boat or a plane?
Boat.
Wow. Probably would have left Athens or somewhere.
You know, that's a good question. I never asked her that, but I do have a picture of the book for not only for my mom's family at Ellis Isle, where they signed in, but also my dad's. My dad was third or fourth generation Italian, but I have someone sent me a picture. They were there and snapped a picture. I have the information of them when they came over. I don't think that was at Ellis Isle. It was at another place in New York when they came in. But
so did your mom and dad meet in Boston, or?
My dad was working as...
I've got 17 more questions.
Yes.
Be prepared.
She was a secretary, and my dad kind of spotted her. He was a young engineer. There was 8 years difference. She was almost 20 when they got married. He was 28. But they started going out. And my mom had been abused as a child in Greece and had, as a result of that, her left arm had been broken, and they were so poor that it couldn't be reset. So her left arm was crippled, not completely useless. But I remember telling the story. She would told us the story. In Greece, if you were crippled, folks, I don't know what the politically correct way of saying that was, but if you were crippled, you were not considered whole, and sometimes women couldn't even get married. And after they'd been on several dates, my mom, she always wore long sleeves to cover that left arm. She told my dad about her injury and said, I would understand if you didn't want to date me anymore.
Hmm.
And, of course, my dad said, that doesn't matter, you know, to me. But
were Greeks and Italians rivals in a way? Or?
No, it was funny because now, you know, ancient times, Rome and the Greek city-states were at war. But the Nazis occupied Greece, and then because they had to move troops for the Russian invasion, the invasion of Russia, they brought the Italians in, who weren't at the same level of fighting ability, to occupy Italy. And my mom has stories about how cruel the Nazis were to children, because the children were very hungry, and the Nazis would say, hey, you want some milk? And they would pour it out right in front of the kids and, you know, stomp it into the mud. But the Italians would feed the children. So my mom's parents only wanted their daughters to date Greeks, but when they met my dad and found out he was Italian, they, because of how the Italians treated the Greeks during the war, they said, Italian, same thing.
Wow.
So they let her date
What a story, man. You need to write all this down somewhere for your family's.
I have a lot
video
of
or something.
Yeah, I have a lot of it written down.
Oh, do you really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good, because your children and their children and their children, they're going to want to know these stories.
Yeah.
Especially about, you know, because that's how they came to be Americans, right?
Yeah.
Came from the old country. Your
that's
dad
right.
and your mom's family
right.
came from the old country, Italy and Greece. Well, I have been to both. I've been to Greece. Have you been to?
I have not.
Italy or Greece?
I have not. I think once I landed in Madrid, but I'm not sure. No, that was,
oh, joke, yeah, this is
a joke
from
yesterday.
2 days ago or 2 days ago, yesterday.
I've never been to, it's kind of on our bucket list, but I've never been to.
Yeah, well, you better hurry up. that bucket's getting full.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
Just saying.
No, I don't.
You don't want to be 85 going, I should have done that, but I can't now because I don't know where
to go. Hey, wheel me over to that restaurant.
All right. Well, there's so much to talk about. Mm-hmm. Chris, what's our first news story today?
Well, I think we as Christians need to be praying for the people of Libya and certainly the relief organizations that are going to be spending the next several weeks helping the people of Libya. And I bring this up because in a story few people know, although we do have a link for it on our website now on AFN.net. There was a storm there, and it's described by the AP as Mediterranean Storm Daniel. It caused devastating floods in Libya. It broke dams, swept away at least, entire neighborhoods in multiple coastal towns. More than 2,000 people are dead, and as many as 10,000 are missing from a storm.
I've never heard of such.
Yeah, when I walked in this morning, Fred was telling me about this, and I had not heard about this storm. Now, it is covered at AFN.net.
Yes, I will
and
share
a link. I'm going to get you, Chris, in just a second to explain what AFN is for our listeners, because you need to take advantage of this. But I'm with you, Tim. When Fred told me, I said, a tropical storm in the Mediterranean?
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that.
I had never heard of a storm of that kind of magnitude, but the fact that I guess it broke those dams with so much water.
Okay, yes, so 10,000 people missing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's, Fred, when did you learn of this?
Well, just in the last couple of days, we were focused yesterday on the earthquake in Morocco.
Right.
Which, ongoing rescue efforts there, as of late yesterday afternoon, death toll there, over 2,400 people. They're still searching for people in Morocco. So that was the focus yesterday. And then it was late yesterday, early this morning, they started talking about what's going on in Libya. First, I just heard there was some flooding in Libya. But then I started to see the story about 3-4 hours ago about the number of people missing, number of people dead. So I dug a little further into it. And so there was this tropical storm Daniel on the weekend in eastern Libya. Kind of mountainous, and they have dams there. And the flooding was so bad, these dams broke, come pouring down. And there are some of these cities, there's not even rescue efforts underway yet.
Right.
They're so remote. You're talking cities of 90,000, not just villages. And so as we discussed yesterday in the case of Morocco, building structures there are very weak.
Yes.
Morocco.
Not wealthy.
Not built to sustain earthquakes, likewise in Libya, not built to sustain flooding because it's if you know anything about North Africa, it's very dry.
Yes.
So they
it's the Saharan Desert.
Yeah, they don't worry about flooding too much in that part of the world.
Right.
They welcome rain most of the time. And so
the ground that's very dry doesn't hold water a lot of times. It just sweeps over.
Yeah. So North Africa, right across that whole stretch, east to west, we need to be praying for those folks because they are experiencing things. Like we mentioned yesterday, Morocco hasn't had an earthquake in 120 years. I'm not sure of the dating on Libya, whether they've had these kinds of floods before.
Well, I don't pay attention to the weather in the Mediterranean every day, but you just don't think of a tropical storm developing in the Mediterranean. You just don't ever hear of that.
Mm-hmm.
But massive flooding, so the dams break in Libya, and this like something horrible movie. This water just rushes down on people in these towns and villages.
Wipes it out.
Wipes it out.
So. And by the way, it says here in our story, Mediterranean storm. I said tropical storm. That may not be the same right. thing. But anyway, Chris, before we move on,
yes.
let our listeners know about American Family News and about how they can get stories like this mm-hmm. that I haven't seen. I don't see it on Fox or right. Other places, but we do cover it. So
yes, we do. And our website, again, is afn.net. That is the website for American Family News. What you hear on the radio is the radio version of American Family News. What you see at afn.net is kind of the print side of things. So you'll see a lot of the stories you'll hear on the radio in print as articles on afn.net. But Fred does a great job of keeping our Associated Press content up to speed throughout the day. He'll post various things and make sure it's going through the proper filter so the AP doesn't get their liberal bent in things. But we also have videos that you can watch. We have columns. There's even political cartoons from time to time. So do check us out on afn.net.
All right, next story.
Well, the Biden administration is...
next story.
I do need to bring this one up because it is a big international story. On the day that the U.S. remembered how Islamic terrorists killed 3,000 Americans on 9/11, the Biden administration announced it would free up $6 billion for Iran in a prisoner swap with that country, which, of course, is recognized as the world's leading sponsor of terrorism. So we're going to give terrorists and their country $6 billion on the same day that we just set aside to remember those killed on 9/11. A lot of people are upset about this.
Well, now, we're giving them $6 billion. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for American prisoners,
yes.
right? So
and
not
we're giving
just,
them
not,
some
not
prisoners
just handing them
well.
Cash for no reason. I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there's an exchange mm-hmm. going on. How many Americans are being... handed back over.
There's five Americans in the deal, but don't forget, part of the deal is we're giving up five Iranians who are in our prisons for spying.
Oh, it's an even swap plus cash.
Yes. Plus cash, yes.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Democrats are notorious for just making uneven trades. Mm. Now, when you talk about human lives, it's that sounds, the way I described it is like some kind of an NFL trade or something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking about if it's your loved one who's in Iran, you don't care that, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That you just want them back. You don't care what the cost. So, but when you're a government like the American government, you have to say what's equitable and what's in our best interest as a nation. And so we're giving them five Iranians. Where are these Iranians? Will they be held at Guantanamo or something or what?
No, they're in various prisons here. If you got a minute, I'll just go through. I'm not going to try to pronounce their names. An Iranian charged in 2021 with allegedly failing to register as a foreign agent on Iran's behalf while lobbying U.S. officials on issues like nuclear policy. Another Iranian sentenced to 63 months in prison for obtaining equipment that could be used in missiles, electronic warfare, nuclear weapons, and other military gear. Another Iranian, permanent resident of the United States, whom prosecutors charged in 2019 with allegedly stealing engineering plans from his employer. Another one charged in 2021 over allegedly unlawfully exporting laboratory equipment to Iran. And finally, number five, an Iranian-American sentenced in February of this year to 30 months in prison for purchasing, quote, sophisticated top-tier U.S. electronic equipment and software through front companies in the United Arab Emirates.
Now, we should also mention, and by the way, a lot of Republicans, as you might expect, very critical of this deal, some calling it shameful. It is not technically U.S. money going to Iran. This is Iranian money that was frozen.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it is being unfrozen so that Iran can get it back. I'm just making it clear that it's
correct.
not U.S. tax dollars.
Well, as apparently, too, as part of the deal, so I'm just quoting from this, the Iranians say had to agree that they would only spend this $6 billion on humanitarian issues.
Right.
Now,
which is what they claim their nuclear research.
If you can trust the Iranians to say we're only going to do this to help our poor people
mm-hmm.
In Iran.
In fact, officially, they have responded by saying We will use it wherever we need it.
Yes.
That's a quote, that last part.
I did dig up...
But Corinne Jean-Pierre has just issued a statement saying she will refer you to the Iranian government.
That's right.
For further comments.
Further comment on the trade deal. Go ahead.
If you've ever watched a film or a TV show, you're probably familiar with the phrase, we don't negotiate with terrorists, right?
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Kind of a thing that many people believe to be kind of the standard way of living for our way of government. We don't negotiate with terrorists. What's interesting here, I don't know how people back in the day did it without the internet, but in my generation, you know, we're blessed to have the internet because you can always go find out a comment from the same person years ago. But back in February of this year, when President Biden and his administration were in a spending battle with Republicans, President Biden said, we don't negotiate with fiscal terrorists. So apparently in September of 2023, he doesn't have a problem with giving a terrorist nation money.
Democrat presidents in particular have a reputation of giving away making deals that are not equitable. Mm-hmm. Are in the best interest of our country in terms of we give this for that and the other side gives that for this. Evidence, mm-hmm. Okay, you remember when President Obama gave away the Guantanamo terrorists, four or five of them or more, for Bergdahl. Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Bo
Bergdahl. He was a serviceman mm-hmm. in Afghanistan
right.
who basically went over to the other side, went over to the Taliban. You remember that?
After we had people searching for him and
right.
trying to
remember that?
Maybe he was a deserter.
He was a deserter. Well, Obama said, I think a good trade would be we'll get our deserter back and we'll give them five or six terrorists out of Guantanamo. You remember that?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then most recently we had the, Grenier, I think was her name. Brittany Grenier, is that her name?
Russia.
The basketball player.
Right.
The professional basketball player. She was arrested in Russia for having marijuana or some kind of dope in her backpack. You remember she was traveling over there? She was playing over there? This may have been, no, I think this was just after the war started, if I remember correctly, between Ukraine and Russia. Anyway, she was arrested, imprisoned. Well, then we already had one American over there. Remember that fellow who was already in prison. But Biden wanted to do a politically correct trade. So he decided, hey, this we'll trade the Merchant of Death, which we had in our prison, which was a Russian who was involved in international arms deals. The Merchant of Death was his nickname. I forgot his real name. We'll trade him to get our basketball player back, Brittany Grenier, mm-hmm. the young lady. So he didn't even get the other American out of it. I'm talking about Biden. You remember that? The man. I forgot his name. He's still over there, I think.
Yeah. You're talking about Victor Bout was the Merchant of Death? I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, but the fellow I'm talking about is the American man whose imprisonment preceded Brittany Grenier's.
Yes.
Okay.
He's a Marine.
Paul Whelan.
Yes. And in the swap, Biden didn't even get him back.
Right.
No. Nope.
He's still over there.
And he's been there much longer.
Right. But this was a politically correct trade. In other words, Biden said, well, we can deal for the basketball player because she's a lesbian of color.
Right.
And that'll look good on my resume with everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So forget about the white Marine.
Right.
Over there who's been held. Right. I'm just saying what we all know to be true.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so he made the swap for the Merchant of Death for the basketball player and left the Marine over there. Now, you know what? To her credit, the Brittany Grenier.
Yeah.
She's been championing the cause of the Marine.
Did she meet him while she was over there?
I don't know, but she's been speaking out on his behalf.
And she's also said that she appreciates this country.
Right.
And the flag, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Right. I think I think she did learn a hard lesson by being in prison in Russia, just how good she has it.
Right.
In America. She was one of those BLM protesters.
Yes.
But she has changed her tune. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Did you guys see what happened to Aaron Rodgers last night?
I read about it. I did not see it.
I didn't see it actually happen in real time, but
he's the quarterback for the New York Jets.
Yes, NFL star. He was traded or signed a free agency. He played for Green Bay for all those years, yep. Green Bay Packers. And then he went over to the New York Jets this year. He's 39 years old.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers. And signed this multi-million dollar, obviously, contract. And the whole build-up to the season, really the story of the one of the big stories of the NFL, was Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets and how, you know, maybe making them a Super Bowl contender.
They went from chumps to contenders.
Right. And now the first drive of the season, it appears like he's suffered an Achilles injury, which that kept me from the NFL.
You sure that's not your reason?
You know that story. I don't have time to tell it. We'll get into it later.
I gave up my band career for professional sports.
So the Achilles injury, they got
you know, they got the artificial turf.
Yeah.
In the a lot of sports. And
you know, they had a game there Sunday night between the Cowboys and Giants.
Not really following.
So the field conditions were
bad. Joke here.
Sorry.
Chris is—he's a newsman.
I will tell you that an MRI has revealed that he did suffer a complete tear of Achilles tendon. That's according to CBS.
Okay, you get a 39. I don't care if you're 18. Achilles is going to put you out for a year,
and can end your career anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at 39, how does he get back in shape?
I don't know.
But now he has, I think, a 3-year contract with the Jets, guaranteed.
Oh yeah.
So
they're fools.
Yes.
Huh.
For a 39-year-old quarterback.
They're fools because maybe that's the way you have to play the game in the professional sports. But to pay a guy 3 years in advance or to guarantee money when you could have a injury like this. Maybe they have insurance for something like this. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought, you know, the whole build-up to the NFL season was Aaron Rodgers now with the New York, the big marquee market, New York, and first series.
Yeah.
He tears his Achilles. Now, you don't have to have your Achilles to throw, though. That's what I'd tell him. If I were the boss of the Jets, I'd say, get out there, man.
Get.
You can sit in the shotgun, and we'll put you a brace on. You're going to pass.
I think it's very sad that your NFL career was really halted.
Thwarted. I would use the word thwarted.
Thwarted.
You don't hear
it even got started.
Make thwart great again.
Yes. All right. So anyway, that's what happened last night. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now is Jenna Ellis. Jenna is host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio, weekdays from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time right here on AFR. And she is a constitutional attorney. And Jenna, good morning to you.
Good morning. And, you know, the NFL season for me, what I look forward to the most is pumpkin spice lattes. So that's back. And, you know, that's actually the best thing.
Right. About football season?
About football season.
Well,
yes.
To each his own. Or to each her own. I guess yes. I should say. Ed's contemplating.
I just don't get it. I just don't get the pumpkin spice thing.
Yeah, you're so missing out. There's always time. Just go and like take a Saturday afternoon, bring a book to your favorite local coffee shop, and just sit out there and savor the pumpkin and the crisp in the air, and maybe Instagram.
We're in Mississippi.
It.
We don't have crisp.
You know, it's awesome.
Okay, now Jenna, I guess maybe part of my problem is I don't like coffee. So that
this is a bigger issue.
It will be an altar call at the end of
today.
But maybe some pumpkin spice diet Coke first thing in the morning. Maybe that
actually
could be.
there is pumpkin spice chai if you like tea.
I don't like tea either.
Oh my gosh!
If it's healthy, he doesn't like it.
Popcorn?
I don't know.
There's pumpkin spice like popcorn. There's pumpkin spice cookie. There's actually, and Tim, I texted you this the other day. There's actually, and I hope that this was just a joke, but there were actually pumpkin spice little wafer crackers for communion.
I saw that.
So I mean,
no.
I'm just saying.
God is not mocked.
Now we're going to have communion every Sunday.
That's probably true at some church named the Horizon or River Creek Church.
Some church with the water mentioned in their name,
yes.
Which is like every other church now, huh?
With the
water
pastor
group.
Has straight
the
leg,
river.
Straight leg jeans, and they have pumpkin spice communion. You know what?
They have rockets.
Just leaning into the season.
Yeah.
You know, it's all good things from the Lord. This just embrace it. Go with us.
I will say this, Jenna. I am a little bit of an oddball. I in a lot of ways, I have
confirmed
pepperoni cologne. Pepperoni, and sometimes I use the. Italian sausage cologne.
Aftershave.
That's
more than an oddball. That's a deeper problem. In addition to not liking coffee,
remind me not to travel with you on an airplane.
That's right. A little bit extra for you, Fred.
Here comes Pizza Hut Ed. All right, everybody, get ready.
It is a problem in the summer with dogs following me.
We had a legal question to ask. Jenna, about true?
Kind of a cultural question.
Okay.
Couple of things in the news that do involve the law. Let's begin in Virginia, where the father of a Virginia student sexually assaulted in her high school bathroom. That father has been pardoned after his arrest 2 years ago, protesting a school board meeting. Became a flashpoint in the conversation there between parents and school.
That was because of a transgender student in the girls' bathroom.
Yes. I do have audio here that I can play if you want.
Just to be clear, sometimes I dumb things down too much. We had a this is in Loudoun County.
Correct.
In Virginia. A transgendered student assaulted a young girl. Well, she was how old?
A teenager.
Her dad found out about it. The school tried to hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad found out about it, went to the school board meeting, and got very upset and angry to the point where he was arrested.
Yes, convicted of disorderly conduct.
And now, Jenna, the governor of Virginia, Youngkin, has decided to pardon him. Is that the story?
Right. That's my understanding.
Okay.
And I applaud him completely for this decision.
What? I'm just curious, what kind of pardoning powers does a governor have? Does that vary from state to state?
It does. It does vary from state to state. And for example, the pardon power in Georgia, with a lot of people looking at the Trump indictment, the governor there, Governor Kemp, doesn't have direct power like the governor in Virginia does. That's actually in Georgia. There's a pardon board and it has to go through a number of other processes. It's not just direct from the governor or like what we're all used to and familiar with on the federal level with presidential pardons. But really, in the history of pardons and clemency, the whole idea is that the executive branch, because the executive is responsible for pursuing justice and can be the only entity that can prosecute criminal offenses. I can't, as a private citizen, you can't. I could sue in civil court, but I can't bring a criminal action. I can only go and ask a prosecutor to. And on behalf of the state or the United States. And so the idea is that the chief executive, which would be the governor or in the federal, on the federal level, the president, is the last full stop to implement justice when a prosecution is unjust or has gone too far, or a judge or a jury has handed down a sentence that is actually unjust. And so this particular instance of Governor Youngkin exercising pardon power, I think, is a perfect example of how administration of justice really should happen like this, where even if this father was within the bounds of the law in terms of disorderly conduct, clearly, with everything in context, he should not have been prosecuted. And this was an excellent decision, in my opinion, from the governor in Virginia.
Well, Jenna, one of the things we wanted to get your thoughts on is kind of springboarding off what happened in Loudoun County, going across the country to California, where our understanding is that state has now passed and signed into law a bill that gives the state the power to remove children from their parents if those parents don't fully support their gender fluidity, their gender identity, or their desire to transition from one gender to another. I say that with air quotes, but so we wanted to get your take on that law in California, but also what you think about this war on parental rights, because that was clearly in view in Virginia, which was one of the first states to kind of lead this charge to support kids' gender fluidity with or without parental opinion. What is going on in this country?
Yeah, well, the sexual revolution was always coming for our children and had to get parents out of the way. And there's actually a great opinion piece that I referenced on my show this morning talking about this specific bill from World Magazine. And the headline is "A Tyrannical Assault on Parental Rights." And it's by Nathaniel Blake, and I'm not familiar specifically with the author, but it's a really timely opinion piece on this. And he says, "Treating parents as enemies was the inevitable conclusion of the transgender movement's premises, which declare that children are being born into the wrong bodies and are destined for lives of misery, likely ending in suicide, if their trans identities are not socially affirmed and medically assisted by radical body modification. If this were true, then parents who resist, quote unquote, life-saving gender-affirming care for their children really would be ignorant at best, abusive at worst, and deserve to be treated as dangers to their children." This is exactly what this California bill is requiring now of judges in cases of contested child custody to consider. And so judges historically, and of course this varies from state to state, now we're seeing how much it varies in California, they consider the best interests of the child. And what that means in context of child custody should rightly understand that parents are responsible and have the constitutionally protected fundamental right to direct the care and upbringing of their children, even if a judge disagrees. So, for example, a Christian parent should not be targeted or be looked at as an unfit parent by the state simply because they're raising their children to be Christians and to follow after the word of God. But this is what this legislation in California is doing, is specifically saying the state knows better and the state is going to control your kids if you dare to raise them Christianly in California.
Jenna, Fred here. It reminds me of a case in Germany a few years ago. We covered homeschool family there, where the state of Germany moved in because the state wanted to ensure these children were raised with secular state values. And I was reminded of that in starting to cover this this story in California. And I keep reminding people, too, Joe Biden just a few weeks ago said, "These are our children," referring to our being the state. So I think this is an agenda that's been in place a long time. The left wants to extract children, especially from Christian parents, from parents with conservative values, to teach and indoctrinate the kids with secular values. Am I being off base there?
No, absolutely. That's the agenda. And we're seeing this with the responses to Florida's parental rights and education bill. We're seeing this in the overarching march from the left to pursue the sexual revolution's agenda and really a Marxist agenda, because that Marxism is statism. And this whole idea that the state is the one that determines when, where, and how we can exercise our rights. And they are coming for children. And so everything that is going on in the classroom, that's now going on in courtrooms. And I was reminded of the California legislation not that long ago that thankfully didn't pass, that was talking about pastors or life coaches or any sort of therapy that was going to promote a biblical worldview was essentially going to be outlawed. And this is a wholesale push not only to excise children from the only Christian influence in their lives that is God-given, which is the parents, but to have the state have complete authoritarian control. And for anyone who is paying attention of what's going on in California versus, for example, Florida, this is why state sovereignty does matter and why we have to continue to advocate for all 50 states to understand that parental rights are fundamental and foundational. And I hope and expect that parents and some conservative organizations are going to immediately challenge this legislation in California, and they should win.
Hey, it's Chris here. When I talk to an attorney, one of the questions I will often ask the attorney towards the end of the interview is, let's imagine somebody listening and they kind of go, you know, like I think a lot of people do, they hear something about California or maybe Colorado, and they roll their eyes and think, well, that'll never impact me. I live in Columbus, Mississippi, or something like that. If you're a listener in Arizona or Alabama or some other part of the country, should you be paying close attention to what's going on in California or Colorado or some other state? Because what's happening there could be in your state house at some point in the future.
Absolutely. And not just through state-sponsored legislation in your own state, but remember that every single case that ultimately winds its way up to the United States Supreme Court started on a local level. And so Colorado, my former home state, for example, that was the inception of the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, the 303 right. Creative case. And those cases that ultimately are protecting religious freedom and free exercise and free speech from the very top, and from the U.S. Supreme Court, those started in states. So we do need to be paying attention so that it's not replicated in our home states, but also so that we can be involved in challenging the bad legislation, and hopefully on a more national level or even at a circuit court level, we can get good opinions and good decisions that strike down that legislation that will ultimately impact ourselves in our own states.
Jenna, who's going to be on your show in the morning? Do you know? Or are you going to, what are you going to be talking about?
You know, my producer right now is in jury duty, and so I have not had an opportunity. You know, and I'm fully with Luke that he needs to go and be a good citizen. And so as soon as he gets out on a break coming up soon, we will talk about it and plan the show for tomorrow. So we're still following Ken Paxton's impeachment, which has been a fascinating example of how Republicans just got way over their skis, and they are actually targeting political opponents in their own party. So we'll be talking about that this week, including, you know, a few other things as well. But that has been, if people are not following that, even again, not just within the state of Texas, but this has been openly live streamed. I have caught as much as I could of it, and it has been really fascinating.
Talking about Ken Paxton, the AG of, and he's having an impeachment trial?
Yes.
First one in a long time there.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Jenna. Appreciate it. Take care. Look forward to tomorrow.
Go drink some pumpkin spice something or other.
Oh, I have it right here. You can't see it, but it's in even my little pumpkin-shaped mug. I am fully on board
Wow.
with this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm the one with the mental illness.
Hey. I'm right. just embracing the season.
Thank you, Jenna.
Thanks so much.
By the way, the article that Jenna referenced from World Magazine, I think, that is Brent Creeley, our producer, has posted that on our Facebook page. So check that out. I haven't read it yet, but the way Jenna explained it sounds powerful.
I didn't ask Jenna about this because she's already gone, but she said she's embracing the season.
Right.
She doesn't have a season.
She lives in, Florida.
She has one season.
Yeah.
She lives in Florida.
Florida has one season, and it's called delightful.
It's called light summer and humid summer.
Yeah.
Light
and then
summer,
hurricane.
Light summer is January, February.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is, Florida has, that's what attracts a lot of people.
Right.
It's warm. It's warm all year round. But anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Fred, and Chris. Chris, what is your next story?
Well, in case people missed it, the Democratic governor of New Mexico basically ignored the Constitution in recent days when she told people, due to what she called a rise in gun violence, people weren't allowed to carry guns anymore in the state of New Mexico, specifically really the Albuquerque area there in New Mexico. And the reason I bring this up is because people are obviously upset about this. She violated the Second Amendment. And that's not just me saying as much. You've got the sheriff there in the Albuquerque area saying, hey, I'm not going to enforce this because what she said is not legal. So you have a battle there between a law enforcement officer and the governor over the Second Amendment issues.
Also, one of the local district attorneys said the same thing the sheriff said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these are probably Democrats themselves.
Yeah.
You know.
We had, we quoted yesterday, one of the high-profile Democrats from California, very liberal, who said, no, you cannot do this, Governor of New Mexico. It is, you cannot just say, I'm abolishing that portion of the Constitution. For
the United States Constitution.
Yes. Right. You can't do that.
No, you can't do that. But she thought she could.
And she's told the sheriff, mm-hmm. she's responded and told the sheriff to stop being squeamish and enforce the order.
Really?
Yes.
That's what she
she's
said.
She's doubling down.
She says she'll send in the state police mm-hmm. to enforce it.
Yes.
Keep in mind, I didn't know she had amped it up to this level.
Oh,
Keep in mind the law-abiding gun owners in New Mexico, of which there are a plenty, are not responsible for the gun violence in New Mexico. So therefore,
right.
telling people you can't carry your gun around to protect yourself isn't going to do diddly squat.
And she responded, as Tim mentioned yesterday, responded to a reporter who asked her, do you think during this 30-day abrogation of the Second Amendment, do you think criminals are going to respond and not use their guns while committing crimes? And she had the nerve to say, no, I don't think they will follow. But what a statement we're making
yes.
by taking away people's Second Amendment rights.
And, you know, this is why I've said it before on the show. I'll keep saying it again until Jesus comes back, and then I'm working for
God.
The Heavenly Network. But anyway, this is why people need to know what the Constitution says and don't rely on a news outlet or a politician, because what happens is you have Democrats like this governor saying, we're going to do this, and news outlets who don't know anything or too squeamish to challenge her on it don't report that it's a constitutional violation. You yourself need to know what you are allowed as a citizen.
And by the way, the governor's name is Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. She's the individual who is
just recently reelected, too.
Yes. 2019 was it, or
recent years? Yeah,
so she's directly challenging the sheriff. She's saying, I'll send in the state police to overrule the sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said that the state police are charged with upholding this order, and I guess that means that if the sheriff won't, state police will.
She was reelected last year.
My bad.
I wonder. That's an interesting question. If you're I don't know what you would call the leader of the state police, do you say yes, ma'am, and go arrest the sheriff?
Oh no, I don't think that won't happen. No, I think what she's implying is that state police will enforce it. So if you're pulled over, I'm guessing in Albuquerque or anywhere in the state, or is it just Albuquerque? Maybe just Albuquerque.
Well, next 30 days.
Yeah. And in this state, I have an enhanced carry permit. When I'm pulled over, I hand the officer not only my driver's license, but my enhanced carry permit. So I'm assuming that in Albuquerque, if you're pulled over on an interstate and you do that, you hand over both licenses, a license and a permit to the state trooper, and the trooper says, do you have your weapon on you? And you say, yes, I'm guessing that, you would be arrested.
Well, now, my guess is these state troopers are Second Amendment people themselves, almost all of them.
I would hope.
But now, that begs an interesting question. Do they disregard a direct order from the governor in the name of it's unconstitutional?
I think what you're going to find is you're going to find some state troopers who just ignore it. They don't even ask if you have a weapon. But you have some who will say, I'm sorry, I personally disagree with this, but you're going to have to take that up with a lawyer. I'm going to have to put you in handcuffs.
But I'll bet you the, again, I don't know what you call the leader of the highway patrol or the state trooper or the state police. I bet they're going to be asked today, what are you going to comply with this by the governor? Are you going to carry out the governor's orders, or are you going to be like the sheriff who says not going to do it? You know, you shouldn't have to have a judge rule on this. This is what's the expression? Self-evident. So
state police chief is what it's called in New Mexico.
Yeah. Okay.
There are 6 legal challenges to this already in the last 24 hours. And a Biden-appointed judge is not letting any of these cases go forward for a specific period.
Okay. This is the goal of some, I would say a lot, of Democratic politicians, be it mayors, governors. They want, not all of them, because some Democrats are speaking out against this, but probably 50% of the Democratic Party, they want to get rid of guns.
Right.
Period. And they don't care if it violates the Constitution.
And they're probably watching what happens here.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.